This is Positive Parenting. Parenting expertise and advice from best-selling parenting author and national newspaper columnist, Mr. Dad, Armin Brott.
Hey, and welcome to today's Positive Parenting Show. I'm Armin Brott. I'm sure you've heard the statistics that half of all marriages end in divorce. But the truth is that most marriages are healthier and happier than most people believe. For example, the divorce statistic never actually even got close to 50%. If you look at the Census Bureau data, 72% of people are still married to their first spouse. And of the 28% who aren't married anymore, a portion of those marriages ended in widowhood, not divorce. And most marriages are happy. Somehow we get the idea that only about a third of marriages are happy, when in reality, if you look at the data, it's 80% of marriages are. In fact, surveys are showing that 93% of married people say that they would marry their spouse all over again. In this part of today's show, we're going to be talking about the good news about marriage, and we're going to debunk a lot of the myths that are out there about marriage and divorce and happiness. We're also, on a more practical note, going to be talking about the most important habits of the most happily married couples, the things that they do differently that they may not even realize are making them so happy, and that you will be able to replicate in your own marriage, talking about the kinds of things that can help take your marriage from just fine to just the marriage we've always wanted. I'm Armin Brott. We'll start talking about the surprising secrets of highly happy marriages, the little things that make a difference, right after this.
More with Mr. Dad, Armin Brott, after this, from the MrDad.com radio network.
McGruff the Crime Dog here. Let's hear from an identity thief.
Identities are easy to catch online. I send people an official-looking email pretending to be their bank or credit card company and ask them to confirm their personal information. Books them every time.
Safeguard your personal information on the phone, online, and especially at home, because half of identity theft occurs by someone you think you know. Keep your identity to yourself and take a bite out of crime. Learn more from the National Crime Prevention Council at ncpc.org.
A message from this station, the U.S. Department of Justice, Crime Prevention Coalition of America, and the National Crime Prevention Council.
There once was a boy wizard whose name was Larry Smarter.
Larry, why weren't you in Professor Dinky Doodle's mythical creature classification class?
Well, I'm taking Algebra 2 in a foreign language.
Oh, so you can talk to unicorns?
Exactly. Unless they're French.
Larry wanted to go to college, so he visited knowhowtogo.org to find the classes he really needed. Getting into college doesn't happen magically. Learn more at knowhowtogo.org.
Brought to you by the American Council on Education, Lumina Foundation for Education, and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Positive Parenting. I'm Armin Brott, and my guest for this part of today's show is Shanti Feldhahn, who is the author of The Good News About Marriage, Debunking Discouraging Myths About Marriage and Divorce, and also another book, which we'll be talking about in just a minute. Shanti, thanks for joining us.
It is great to be with you.
All right, let's talk about the good news, because I think there's just doesn't seem to be very much of it out there. I mean, there's so much talk about the rising divorce rates, and then there's also talk about declining marriage rates in the first place. Is that more and more people are opting to have kids without marriage? And without making any judgments about that, it does kind of paint a pretty grim picture of the whole life expectancy of the concept of marriage. What's going on?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. We've kind of, believe it or not, we've bought into this sort of this myth, really, that's been woven around our culture that marriage is basically on the decline, most marriages aren't happy, divorce rates are rising. And I started looking at this because this is my background. I'm an analyst, I'm a researcher. I used to work on Wall Street, and I now use that analytical and research background in relationships. And I started to see some data that, like, wait a minute, it didn't match at all what that perception is out there today. And I started to look at the numbers, and it shocked me that marriages in general, I mean, not all marriages, obviously, but in general, marriages are in much better shape than what we popularly believe. And it actually really matters what we believe, because if you think, for example, that half of all marriages end in divorce and you start having trouble in your marriage, at some point you start to think, well, half of all of the everybody else couldn't make it either, so it makes it easier to just give up.
And where did that come from, though?
I'm sorry.
I mean, where did it come from? It seems to be such a standard thing, the statistic that people just throw out there. But you'd think it would have some basis in some statistics someplace.
I know. Here's really the interesting thing about that feeling that so many marriages have ended in divorce and divorce rates are rising. It's really easy when that becomes kind of the standard perception for you to notice it a lot. And you go, you know, you see a couple get divorced or there's somebody in Hollywood that has a short-lived marriage and, you know, they announce that they're consciously uncoupling and you go, yep, there's another one. And it just seems normal. And you miss the fact that those are actually the exception, not the rule. Let me give you a couple of numbers just to sort of show you what I mean by this.
Okay.
You know, as we're talking, you know, everybody thinks that right now there's a 50% divorce rate and that remarriages have an even higher divorce rate. Well, I started to look at the numbers, and according to the Census Bureau, this is not some little sideline study, but according to the Census Bureau, right now, as we're sitting here talking, 71% of women are still married to their first spouse.
Does that mean that 71% of men would also be married to their first spouse?
It's actually 81% of men.
Really?
So if you're looking at couples, it's like, you know, nobody knows the exact number, but it's more like 72, 73, 74% of couples, you know, are still married in their first marriage. Now, that's like, whoa, wait, that doesn't match the conventional wisdom at all. And it's interesting when I started to look even further into that number, 71% of women still married to their first spouse, the 29% that aren't still married, that includes many people who are married for 50 years and their spouse died. That's just marriages that have ended. That's not even just divorce. And so the real divorce rate is considerably lower than that. And we can estimate, you know, there's about a 14% weight of widowhood. There's some other factors.
Mm-hmm.
We can estimate maybe closer to 20 to 25% of first marriages have ended. Now,
how does that break down, Shanti?
Too high, but it is completely different than the conventional wisdom.
Now, how does that break down by age? Is there a different rate for younger people than there is for older people?
Yes. Actually, here's really the interesting thing. The highest rate of divorce of any generation in history is the baby boomers. The generation before and all the generations after have much lower divorce rates. And the reason for that is that actually what led to rising divorce rates was when, you know, when no-fault divorce kind of started in the 1970s?
Yep.
It kind of made it easier to get divorced. And so there was this quick spike, and everybody, you know, because they realized they could get divorced just because they wanted to rather than having to prove why there was a reason. But that kind of caused chaos. And so really quickly, people stopped getting divorced as quickly. And so divorce rates hit a peak way back in 1980. That only happened for a few years. And the divorce rates have come down since then, 32%, and they are still dropping. People don't know that. And this is the kind of stuff that it's not just a statistic. It's not just, oh, that's kind of randomly interesting. I guarantee you, people listening to this, if they're having difficulties in their marriage or they're trying to encourage a friend or they're talking to a couple that's, you know, they've been living together for a while and they wonder, why should we bother getting married when everybody just gets divorced? Well, the reality is it's not true, and we need to change that perception and restore some hope.
So you really think that the statistic itself or the wrong statistic itself is contributing to the problem?
Oh,
because it just seems like it would be hard
question.
For that.
Yeah, without a question. I'm, you know, my main thing that I do every day is I'm a social researcher, and I interview, and then I do these big nationally representative surveys of men and women and teenagers all over the country for my various relationship books. And one of the common denominators that I've found is that there really is, underneath what happens in a marriage, the outcome of whether it survives or fails, there's really this one factor. There's a lot of different factors that lead to problems, you know, obviously, but under which outcome happens, it's just one thing, really. It's whether the couple has a sense of hope or whether they have a sense of futility. Like, if you're having a really difficult time, but you think, you know what, we're going to be fine, we're going to make it, it's a completely different outcome than once you start thinking, this is never going to change, and we're not going to make it. It becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. So that sense of discouragement and futility and this wrong idea that half of everybody else couldn't make it either and what's so special about us, that can kill a marriage. And it helps. Completely helps to be able to look somebody in the eye who's struggling and to be able to say, you know what, you are going to get through this. Most people do.
I'm just still a little, not completely speechless, of course, but somewhat taken aback by this, because I think I have probably been just as guilty of spreading the wrong statistic as a lot
me
of other
too.
People. Yeah. Oh, good. Okay. So if you're
all
in there with
have.
Me, that's okay.
All of us have.
So that also would, you mentioned in some of the other statistics that the divorce rate for second marriages and third marriages is
yeah.
higher. And is that because people have seen that divorce is an option or is a way out, and so it's a sooner way out? Or are those marriages just like less destined for success than first ones?
Well, believe it or not, the myth that people have, there is a big myth that people have about remarriage as well. It turns out the divorce rates are a little bit higher for second marriages.
Right, but not 50%.
Yeah. A little bit higher, yeah. Just everybody who's been remarried, and I can guarantee you that, you know, there are people in your listening audience that are on their second marriage, and every single one of them has heard that 60% of second marriages end in divorce. And it's incredibly discouraging, no matter how much you want to be committed for a lifetime, to go in thinking you probably won't make it. I mean, good grief. You know, that's just an incredibly damaging feeling. Thankfully, it's just a myth. It's not true. We tried to find the study that said that because we kind of felt that was our job, right? To track down all of these numbers and to see what was true. We traced every source we could find, every book, magazine article, television reference. They all trace back to three sources that don't exist. It's a pure urban legend.
Oh, that's terrible.
Oh, it's okay. Awful. And it's killed so many marriages. It really frustrates me. The reality is that, yeah, the divorce rates are a little higher, but just a little. We talked earlier about 71% of women are still married to their first spouse, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, 65% are still married to their second spouse. Now, that's a little, you know, uptick, but it's not this huge thing. That's 35% that aren't. That's it. And the 35% that aren't, a much bigger percentage of that than in first marriages has to have been people that were married for life and their spouse died because they're getting married at older ages. And so we don't know what the second marriage divorce rate actually is, but we know it has to be less than 35. And there's all these different studies that have been done on it, and they all seem to average at about 30%, which is the opposite of what people think it is. The reality is most remarriages last a lifetime as well.
Talking with Shanti Feldhahn, who's the author of The Good News About Marriage, Debunking Discouraging Myths About Marriage and Divorce, and also a book called Highly Happy, or Surprising, The Surprising Secrets of Highly Happy Marriages. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll keep talking to Hani about what we can do about all this. I'm Armin Brandt. You're listening to Positive Parenting.
My son Casey was a bright, fearless 20-year-old with a boundless future ahead of him. But in the blink of an eye, he was gone. While out riding a skateboard, Casey fell. He was not wearing a helmet. Our whole family wishes he was. It could have saved his life. I'm Captain Kevin Raffelli of the San Mateo Police Department. Parents, encourage your kids to strap on a helmet every time they jump on a bike, scooter, or skateboard. Think of my son Casey and use your head. Put a helmet on. It could save your life.
A message from the Consumer Product Safety Commission.
My dad is a hero. He goes into burning buildings. He finds people inside who need to be saved. Then he helps him get out, even when he can't breathe or see, even when he's a little scared. My dad is a firefighter. He does great things. And the best thing he can do is come home.
The U.S. Fire Administration, a part of FEMA, reminds you to protect the heroes who protect our lives. Have a smoke alarm on every floor. Test it monthly. Replace the battery yearly. Do your part to get out before firefighters have to come in. The fact is, 60% of all fire deaths occur in a home without a working smoke alarm. The good news is, that's a fact that can change. For more information, visit the U.S. Fire Administration at www.usfa.fema.gov. Working for a fire-safe America.
I walk and you drive. So let's make a deal. I'll watch for you and cross the street safely. You watch for me and stop. Think of the impact we can make.
A message from the Federal Highway Administration.
Welcome back to Positive Parenting. I'm Armin Brott. If you're just joining us, we're speaking with Shanti Feldhahn, who's the author of The Surprising Secrets of Highly Happy Marriages, and we also just talked about her book, The Good News About Marriage. Before we get on to the practical, what we can do about this, I just want to ask you the last question about statistics.
Sure.
How does the presence of children influence the divorce rates?
Well, this is something that's not been studied enough, unfortunately, and everybody has different numbers that they've seen, including me. And I'll tell you, interestingly, because I don't want to be part of spreading myths, I don't know which studies that I've been looking at are good and which are bad, honestly, and which are trustworthy and which aren't. The remarriage world, for example, there are some pieces of evidence that seem to say that if you come in, you know, into a remarriage, into a second marriage, and she has children from her previous marriage and he has children from his previous marriage, there's some evidence that that adds this level of complexity, and maybe that divorce rates for those marriages are a teeny bit higher. But there's also some evidence that shows that they're so committed to trying to work it through because they have children that actually the divorce rates for those marriages are lower because they don't want their children to have to go through that again. And so that's an example of what I say when I'm not sure of the answer, I don't want to actually speculate on it because I've seen actually both ways.
Wow. Okay. All right, so let's move
Sorry,
on.
Sorry, I wish I could give you a nice, neat soundbite, but I want to be honest, too.
No, I get it. I'm just still reeling a little bit from having my divorce statistic world turned upside down. But let's talk about some of the practical things. So what do you do? So now that we know that your chances are much better of your having your marriage succeed, there still are things that happy couples do to make relationships last.
Yeah.
In ways that unhappy couples might not. And we're still talking about a divorce rate that's 20-25%. So,
yeah.
So what are happy couples doing?
Yeah, the thing that to me is most important is that depending on the study you look at, somewhere about 25-30% of couples are very happy. And everybody else is just, you know, happy, okay. Some are struggling, or, you know, obviously we talked about some percentage have actually gotten divorced. So there's a big cohort. There's about 75% of people whose marriages could probably be improved to some degree or another, either a lot or a little, and wanting to go from good to great or from bad to great. And I spent the last 3 years for this book that you just mentioned about highly happy marriages. I studied the people who had the highly happy marriages, and I wanted to find out what are these couples doing differently that other people can replicate if they want those same results.
Mm-hmm.
And it was fascinating. I found I was expecting some really big things, and instead I found a bunch of little ones that I didn't, and I don't think many of us would have thought would make that big of a difference. One of the big ones, though, It's a small, simple thing. It's not necessarily easy, but it has this huge impact, is that when these highly happy spouses were hurt, and legitimately hurt by their partner, because everybody has conflicts, right? Everybody has hurt feelings.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
But when they were hurt, they handled it completely differently. They believed the best of their partner's intentions rather than the worst. And it's really easy when you're hurt to kind of, let's just say your wife and your husband says something that really hurts your feelings, and it's really easy to think to yourself, ah, he knew how that would make me feel, and he said it anyway. And without realizing it, what you're saying is, he doesn't care about me. And the happy couple stopped that train of thought, and they went, no, that hurt, but I know my husband cares about me. I know he loves me, so he must not have known how that would make me feel, or he wouldn't have said it.
You're kind of basing that on, okay, if you're going to have the assumption of good intentions on the part of your spouse, or at least not bad attention.
Yeah, exactly.
That's dependent on them actually not having a bad intention. And sometimes we do say things knowing that they're going to cause a certain reaction, or because we know that it's a sore spot and it's not nice, and sometimes we do it anyway.
Yeah, and all of us do that. And the reality, unfortunately, is I love what one person I was interviewing said, even the best husband or wife who deeply cares about his spouse can be jerky sometimes. And we all have been in those shoes. The reality is remembering the big picture and choosing to believe the big picture of the fact that our spouse, unless they're a psychopath, and there are a few of those people out there, but they're statistically very rare, is that most of the time we generally do care. And sometimes we're having a bad day, but it doesn't mean we don't care. And the problem is when you approach your spouse, like, I can't believe you said that to me. You always say that, and you build up this structure in your brain about the fact that they don't care about you. You get defensive, and then that puts the other person on the defensive, and then it goes downhill from there. And you can stop that cycle. One or the other person can stop that cycle. It doesn't have to be both, by choosing to believe that the other person really does care.
You know, at the same time as you're saying that, you're kind of producing an environment where you're making things up in a way. And you talk about one of the other things that happy couples do is don't tell it like it is. As kind of putting honesty off to the side a little bit. How does that all fit? Are you creating a fantasy world that doesn't really exist?
Oh, no, not at all. Actually, I strongly, in that chapter about don't tell it like it is, I strongly encourage honesty. The difference is how you're honest. And the thing I found with these happy couples, it was really fascinating to me, is we hear a lot about brutal honesty, right? You know, you need to be, it's really important in marriage to be brutally honest. And so I heard a lot of people say that. And then I started adding it up, and then I eventually did test it on the scientific survey. And it was fascinating. I didn't hear a single happy couple use those words. They were honest. They were transparent. They had to, you know, like I had one woman, she's this kind of sarcastic, you know, snappy kind of gal and makes me laugh. And she said, oh, listen, I have to be able to go deep with him. I have to be able to tell him, you know, when something's an issue. I have to be able to discuss it with him. But brutally honest, no, that is when I need to be most careful not to hurt him. Honesty, yes. Brutal, no. And that's what we miss. Is that sometimes we think because we're married, we can say anything, and we take intimacy for license, and we speak to our spouse in a way we would never speak to a friend. And you hear somebody, you know, in the grocery store line rolling her eyes at her husband, I can't believe you forgot the dry cleaning again. What were you thinking? You know, I think to myself, would you ever use that tone of voice with your best girlfriend? If you don't,
Can't imagine. Why
would you ever use that tone of voice with your spouse, with the person you're supposed to care the most about? And so that's the problem, is when we mistake intimacy for license and we become unkind. The happy couples, they were honest, but they had a high degree of kindness.
You know, you talk about keeping score, and I've seen, and I guess in my own relationships, and had a divorce here and there, keeping score can be a problem, but you're talking about it in a different way, and I want to have you talk about it. But I mean, the kind I think that most people think about with relationship keeping score is exactly the scenario you just painted of you forgot to get the laundry again, or I did this and this and this, and you have to catch up because you're slacking.
Yeah.
You're not doing, you're changing half the diapers, or you're not driving the kids half the time to school, or whatever it is. How does keeping score, or how can you create a type of keeping score that actually is functional?
Is positive. Well, it turns out we've all been told to not keep score. And when it is in the way you mentioned, keeping score of the negative, it's very damaging. That'll definitely kill a relationship. And this is one of the things that often changed dramatically, is they started, instead of keeping score of what their spouse wasn't doing or what they themselves weren't getting, they started keeping score of what the other person was giving. It was a different way of looking at it, and they became very attuned to a different way of looking at their spouse. And yeah, he forgot to pick up the dry cleaning again, but you know what? I saw that he was so tired after work the other day, and he went out and played ball with the kids in the yard. And you know what? He did that the night before, and the night before, and he did that a bunch of times last week, even though he was so exhausted. He's such a good dad. And they started noticing the good things, and those good things started in their mind outweighing the bad ones. And that attitude shift, that keeping score of the good, ended up making them think, oh my gosh, I've got to give back.
Been speaking with Shanti Feldhahn, who's the author of The Good News About Marriage, Debunking Discouraging Myths About Marriage and Divorce, as well as another book called The Surprising Secrets of Highly Happy Marriages. Shanti, very nice to have you on the show to straighten us out on statistics and other things.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
I don't recycle. I mean, we can just find another planet for your kids to live on, you know?
Noted non-recycler Tommy Crenshaw talks about the future.
Oh, I can totally see finding another planet that can support life when ours fills up with trash.
As an alternative to recycling?
Yeah, an alternative. So we, like, don't have to do it. Recycling. There are lots of planets. Finding one is just a matter of time.
Many people say that recycling is pretty simple and convenient. A matter of keeping select items out of the trash. A lot simpler than finding a new planet, Tommy.
Come on, there's a bunch of planets out there.
Would you recycle on this new planet, Tommy? Or just use it up and throw it away, too?
I really don't have a clue.
Log on to YouGottaBeKidding.org and learn about all the ways you can recycle. Unless you're into lame excuses like Tommy's.
Hey, recycling's just not my thing. Starting over on a new planet? Now that's exciting.
Don't be that guy. Unless you want people looking at you funny. Log on to YouGottaBeKidding.org.
Welcome back to Positive Parenting. I'm Armin Brott, and Sam Fuse is here with us to talk about another Parents at Play segment. You know, this is one of these things, Sam. I know that I've contributed to this problem because I often will hand my daughter a tablet or something in the car. And I've been arguing with her lately because she very quickly says, oh, I'm bored. They just expect to be entertained constantly.
Immediately.
We had a chance to take a look at a number of things that were boredom killers, I guess. They can really keep kids interested in something without having them need to watch something electronic. And all four of these were old school. They actually involved making something, using your hands, using a colored pencil or a marker. There's something nice about that.
Yeah, there's a lot nice about that. As you know, I'm kind of the jerk mom, and I don't hand technology over very willingly. So our go-tos tend to be things like the Scribble Doodle on the go, where, you know, you can work on the coloring pages. It's hardcover. You can't lose it. It's got its own support. You know, you don't need to be looking for something to lean on, things like that. So I am a huge fan of Alex Toys. They make a ton of different projects and products that you can take with you, and everything is where you want it to be. It's easy to take along, pockets everywhere, desks everywhere. I in my opinion, Alex is one of the go-to for travel toys.
Yeah, and the Scribble and Doodle, though, we should mention that it doesn't come with crayons or anything to
write
with,
so
you got to bring your own. This is aimed really at kids probably 3, 4, 5, somewhere in that range.
6, 7, 8. Yeah, probably if they're older than about 8 years old, it's probably going to bore them.
But an 8-year-old would be perfectly fine coloring a backpack, though. Which
yes,
was
actually, our
cool
model
thing
for the color a backpack was my friend's daughter, who is currently 10. So she had a great time coloring that on her way back to Pennsylvania from my house. The markers do stay on, so you want to either wear a smock or a shirt you're not super concerned about. But it's adorable, and then the kids can have the backpack to keep and personalize and keep all their items in afterwards.
Yeah, well, it's especially important when you're moving around in a car and you don't want things to become projectiles. And what's especially
exactly.
especially interesting, I think you mentioned the Scribble and Doodle, how it's got a hard cover, and so it acts as its own table. Well, there's also the Desk to Go, another Alex Toys production.
I absolutely love the Desk to Go and the Car Valet, both by Alex Toys, are just both fantastic. Depending on what you're looking for, one or the other would be absolutely perfect for just about any child. But the Desk to Go has a firm surface, great place to put your markers, your crayons, your paper, anything that your little artist wants to bring along. And it's soft, so when your child is leaning on it on their lap, no problems. The Car Valet is a little bit more of everything. You can bring more art supplies. It's more like a little suitcase as well. It's snap shut. You can keep all your stuff inside. If you have a kid that loves art, or if you are a person that travels often, this is the go-to. This is the one you're going to want.
That's it for this week's Parents at Play column. You can get a lot more reviews of a lot more stuff, toys and games to your heart's content, at parentsatplay.com. Until next week, I'm Armin Brott.
Thanks for listening to Positive Parenting. You can get more information on today's show and what we're working on in the weeks ahead at MrDad.com. While you're there, visit the MrDad.com gift shop with everything you need to help you become the dad or mom you want to be. Positive Parenting is a production of the MrDad.com radio network. Now, go be a great parent.